Oh, boy, have you ever had one of those days where everything seems to go right except those things you need to go right, like the lawnmower, for instance? Well, believe it or not, a temperamental lawnmower was a key player in the life of a family, a man and his wife and children and their neighbor. And we're going to hear all about it on today's edition of Focus on the Family. Our host is psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson, and I'm Mike Trout. Welcome to the broadcast. As we go back a number of years ago, Doctor, to one of the first tapes that you chose to play here on the air, tapes that include a message from someone else, and this has become one of the great moments in history for Focus on the Family.
Well, that's almost an understatement, Mike, because this message that we gave the title to, A Man Called Norman by Mike Atkins, has had an incredible influence on the ministry of Focus on the Family, and probably on Mike Atkins, too. A listener sent us this tape way back in 1984, and I shared it with the executive team. We all loved it, and we put it on the air, and then 2 years later, we aired it again because the response had been so great. And then in the late 80s, we actually did a film. I think it was 1987 that we videotaped a film called A Man Called Norman with Mike Atkins in Chicago. It was a wonderful evening there. That film, that video went all over the place. It was the most popular Christian film in the United States for a long time and in other countries too. Then we brought out a book on the subject called A Man Called Norman. So we have really made use of the message that we're going to let people hear today. Why are we re-airing it? Why are we coming back to this message? Because there's an incredible turnover in the radio audience. There are people who have been with us for 10 or 12 years. They've been following what we've done here. But there are others who just heard about us yesterday.
Yes.
And so on behalf of all those who have not heard this message by Mike Atkins, we're going to return to A Man Called Norman.
We've talked a lot about the message itself. Mike Atkins is a very popular singer and speaker. He travels all over the country. I think he's known throughout the Midwest especially. And perhaps he is best known for his singing. I've seen him on television and in person. He has a wonderful gift from the Lord to communicate, and he has used it exceptionally well in this presentation.
We prayed about what house to buy, and we bought a house. God led us to it, got us a marvelous deal on it. It's the kind of house I loved. It's an old house that I could work on and fix up. First thing I did, I said, I just see in my mind what this house was going to look like when I got finished. Didn't look that way now, but when I finished and I started with the lawn out in the front, there was just an old tree that had rotted and fell down, and I was going to fill in that little hole in the ground, and just, there was still a little bit of a stump. I was going to cut that out, fill the hole in, make it nice and smooth. I forgot, since we prayed, I forgot to check first to see who lived around me. Because I trusted the Spirit of God, you know, that He would take care of those little things like that. And I'm going to tell you who lived right around the house I bought. On my left was a Catholic couple, their family. And on my right, I told you just backwards, on my right was a Catholic couple. On my left was a retired Methodist preacher. We became dear friends. He had great wisdom. He's dead now, but he was one of my dearest friends. And right across the street was a widow lady. And next door to her is the one I want to tell you about. It was an old, we used to, when his kids called them, old haunted looking houses. Now, we had a fellow in our town that everybody used to laugh at. Not everybody, you know what I mean, but generally, and the kids, we'd throw snowballs at him in the wintertime. He was weird. He was strange. You know, he was, a lot of people call him town jokes. They're in every town, I notice. This fellow's name was Norman. Old Norman. He was 6 foot two, thereabouts, and he wore an old felt-looking hat that had so much dirt and oil in it, you couldn't tell what it looked like originally. Wore overalls that were just grease-soaked. He had old house shoes that he'd flop around town in, sometimes rubber galoshes, and they'd just flop when he walked up and down the street. And he'd walk real fast up and down Main Street like this, just and real fast, and then he'd stop and he'd talk to himself. I said, he'd do that all over Main Street. And people would say, boy, he's weird, isn't he? He owned the house across the street from me where the bushes were grown up and the old chocolate paint was falling off the house and the windows were so filthy, and I didn't even think anybody lived there at first. And what, that day that I was out there working on my tree stump, going to fix the yard, in my coveralls, barefoot, my wife and kids had gone uptown to the grocery store or something, I'm digging around the tree stump, going to saw it out. And I look over there. He walked out of that house, and I saw that he lived there, and I said, oh, no. said, Lord, that's Weird Norman over there. I said, you had me by the house across the street from Weird Norman. I said, now, Lord, he's, you know, I don't know exactly what's wrong. We hear a lot of rumors, but he, I got two daughters, and he, sometimes I got to be, and he's strange. Hey, you know, I don't, he might harm him, I thought. And so I watched him. He came down to come out to the sidewalk and go uptown or somewhere, and I said, hi, Norman. He looked at me, and he went, and took off down the street. A couple days later, I was out there working on the same tree stump. He came out again. This time, he came out to work on his lawnmower out in the backyard. Something was wrong with it. It wouldn't run. He worked with it. He looked like he was getting disgusted, and I was watching him. I thought, boy, he really is strange. And then he did something that I'll never forget for eternity. He stood up as tall as he could. He looked like the Incredible Hulk. He raised his arms. He looked at me. He glared at me, and he ran from the back of his yard where I could just see him out to the side of the house, down the side of the house, right at me, stopping at his sidewalk. Praise God, he ran at me and screamed at the top of his lungs. He went, ah! My heart was going, I had a little tool in my hand my brother-in-law made in the shop class at the high school had given it to me, and I remember saying, now, Lord, I know we're supposed to love everybody, but if he comes over here, Lord, I'm going to defend myself. He went back to the lawnmower, and he fooled around with it a little more, got angry some more, ran at me again, stopped at his sidewalk. Every time, three times he did that, three times he stopped at his sidewalk. Suddenly, the presence of the Lord settled all over me. I didn't expect it. I was surprised by it, but it settled all over me. And when it did, it seemed that faith or confidence, or I don't know the right word, more than I normally possessed, it began to well up in me. And I did something that surprised even me. I got up, barefoot, coveralls, walked across that street, and walked up to Norman in his backyard by his lawnmowers. I said, you having trouble with your lawnmower, Norman? He looked at me and he said, you having trouble with your lawnmower, Norman? I said, I just said that. I said, I'm not much of a lawnmower mechanic, Norman. And I heard him say, I'm not much of a mechanic, Norman. As I looked at, cleaned a spark plug, tightened a screw or two. I don't know anything about a lawnmower. And I prayed and pulled that rope, and it ran like it'd been to the repair shop. Just hummed, just... I got up and I looked at him, and he looked at that lawnmower. And he looked at me, and he looked at that lawnmower. And he did something for the first time I saw when he grinned real big. I saw a green and yellow tooth right here. And I saw one over here, and one here, and one here. And those spectacles he had on looked like Coke bottles. They were thick, and he had whiskers, had that old hat. But there he was grinning at me. And after that, every time he'd come out of the house, and I'd say, hi, Norman, he'd go, hello. And then he'd take off down the street. Men in my town said, I reckon what's the matter with Norman. Well, he's in the barber shop. You know, that's where you find out things in town. And especially our small town. And one fellow said, I know what it is. Norman was hit by a Greyhound bus once. I heard that. Another fellow said, no, Fred, that's not it at all. What happened to Norman was he was brilliant. He was a genius. Everybody in the barbershop was... He said, in fact, he was such a genius that his mind exploded one day. I kind of knew what he was talking about. I had an algebra teacher once that... Boy, he knew algebra. He'd come to class every day. As brilliant as he was, he had his tie turned inside out like that every day. And I figured that was from too much, you know. And maybe that's what Norman's problem was. But God didn't care about all that. He said to me, you, beginning to put a little seed way down here deep in my heart for the first time, he said, witness Jesus to him. Well, okay, Lord, One night after church, it is tradition in our town to go to the Dairy Queen. Not so much anymore. We got a new McDonald's too. But in In our town, everybody used to go to the Dairy Queen after church. It was just what they did in those days. It was a trend. And the scene was always the same. You know, whoever got out first, whoever had the 20-minute service got there first, got their ice cream, sat down. Then the church that had the 25-minute service, they followed, and they got there next. They got their ice cream. They always waved at one another. Hi, Bill. Hi, John. Hi. Hi, Betty. How's your family? Fine. How was church? It always interested me. They always said the same thing. They'd say, oh, wonderful. Never had heard anybody have a bad service. And everybody be waving and smiling in the Dairy Queen. And everybody be eating their ice cream. I've done it myself. I'm not saying anything about my neighbors I wouldn't say about myself. I was doing it myself. I was sitting there eating ice cream one night, and I smiled at everybody. Guess who walked in right in the middle of all that? Thank you. He comes, gets his ice cream cone. He always sits there right in the same seat. And every Christian in the place, especially Brother Mike, who travels around the country lifting up Jesus and singing adoration, I rushed over to him and gave him the four spiritual laws. No. I did what everybody else did. I act like I didn't see him. We gave him room. We didn't talk about him or to him about Jesus. I've always wondered why, now that I tell this story. I thought, well, I guess it's because if somebody saw me talking to him, they might think I'm as strange as he is. And the Spirit of the Lord spoke to me and said, quietly, and don't make a show out of it, go over and tell him about Jesus. I said, Carmel, pray for me. I'm going to go talk to Norman. She's getting used to that kind of action, and she prayed, and I went over there, and I sat down, and real quick, and I said, hi, Norman, you remember who I am? He said, you remember who I am? I said, Norman, listen, I'm your neighbor. He said, I'm your neighbor. Had those same glasses on. He had dirt in his left ear. I could not believe it. He had an ice cream cone. He had ate part of it and had part of it in his whiskers. And he looked at me out of those eyes, out of those thick glasses. And I said, Norman, do you know who Jesus is? He said, do you know who Jesus is? I said, because people were beginning to look. I said, Norman, did you ever think about asking Jesus to come into your heart and your life? He never repeated me. For the first time, he said, I've given it serious consideration. I was shocked. A couple nights later, the Lord said, 700 Club's going to have an extra special good program on tonight. Invite Norman. Hey, Norman. Hey, Norman, y'all come over tonight. Watch television. 700 Club got a big... come on. Well, the Lord wanted to witness to him. He said, okay. He dressed up for us that night. He didn't take a bath. He didn't put on different clothes. He put on an old string tie that somebody had given him. Hung about like that. And here he come across the street that night. And he come up the steps and... he came in the house. I've got a chair that is light colored, gold, very light, velvet, kind of, it's my lazy boy. I love it. I crank it out, you know, go, and I love it. It's right in front of the television. And the Lord said, get him there where he can see, because he's got those glasses, and I want to witness to him. And I said, Norman, come on in. We're really glad to have you tonight at our house. Lied. I said, sit down over here in my chair. He sat down in my chair and he watched 700 Club. He was witness to. My wife sat back here and I sat back here and we watched him watch 700 Club. And after a while, he got up and said, thank you very much. And he started out the door and I went over and turned the light on for him. I said, watch the steps. Good night, Norman. Good night now. Come back. And good night. Closed the door. I ran in the house, ran over to my chair. I looked at my chair. There wasn't a spot on it. It was like no one had ever sat there. It was clean. My wife sprayed a little bit of stuff in the air, and the house smelled real good, and we couldn't even tell he'd been there. A few days later, the Lord said, take him somewhere with you. I said, hey, Norman, you ever go to the St. Louis baseball game? Busch Stadium, St. Louis?
No. Like to.
I said, we'll go. Picked him up just a few days later. It was hot weather by this time. He come out with one of the longest wool tweedy looking winter coats on you've ever laid eyes on. It touched him about his shoes, and he's big, tall. He looked like the Gray Ghost when he come out of the house. I said, Norman, you're not going to need that coat. It's hot, you know. We're going to be outdoors. He said, I said, Norman, you know. Get in the car, Norman. Turn the air conditioner wide open. headed up the interstate to St. Louis. He kept looking at that CB radio. Finally, I said, talk on that thing. Here, push that button and talk. I said, hey, man, breaker, we got a fella here never had a CB, never been around one before. He mows lawns around our town for a living, and he cleans ashes out of the furnaces in the wintertime. I said, let's give him a name. Give him a nickname. Somebody said, well, he'd be the old grass cutter. And I said, here, old grass cutter, talk to him. He said, hello? It's the old grass cutter. And he was fascinated. He got to St. Louis at the ball game. We parked in the parking area. And when we got out of the car, I figured out a plan. I said, Norman, I'm not going in the ball game with you if you wear that stupid old coat. I was really afraid what somebody would think again. I said, Norman, leave it in the car. Just leave it here. He looked at me and he studied me to see if I was really that serious, and I was. And we faced off for a while, and finally he began to take that old coat off. And when he took it off, I saw why he was wearing it. He had on two pair of dress pants that were split, both of them, all the way up the back. I said, put your coat back on, Norman. We went in the ball game. We turned that turnstile and walked in. And the first guy we saw was a little old guy with a T-top on. He had a shorts on right here. He didn't have a muscle on his body, but he thought he did. He had hair that stood out like a Brillo pad. He had a transistor radio great big under this arm. He had a big cup of something to drink in this arm, and he was bebopping in the ball game. He looked at Norman, never batted an eye. Looked at me a little strange. We got in. Norman didn't watch the game at all. He watched the crowd. 30,000 people. He said, could I have a hot dog? I gave him a hot dog and then another one and then 10 more. And I gave him soda and peanuts. I never seen a machine eat like that. He just ate and ate and ate. And the seventh inning got there. And I forgot it was the seventh inning. Everybody in the place stood up to stretch. And I said, oh, yeah, Norman. But this time I had told him, because it was hot, he was perspiring. I said, just take your coat down and drape it over the seat. Sometime back around the third inning or so, and he draped it over the seat, and he was much more comfortable. But now it was the seventh inning, and we were standing all over the park, and I said, stand up, Norman, let's stretch. And we were just stretching away, and all of a sudden I happened to glance behind me. The guy behind me was going, I said, sit down, Norman, sit down, sit down. It'd been a busy year. I'd been working at the coal mine, and I was tired, and I've been singing in churches on the weekend, and I was telling the Lord about, because my vacation was coming up. And you know what the Lord told me? He said, why don't you take Norman with you on vacation? I said, I'm going to Opryland, Lord. Norman at Opryland just... And he said, I said, Lord, I'm not going to do it now. I'm tired. And a couple of weeks later, we was going down the highway to Opryland. Norman sitting beside me, my wife and kids in the back. I noticed something about him. He was beginning to be relaxed around people. He was beginning to be less nervous, and he didn't talk to himself as much as he had before. We got to Opryland, and I didn't put him on the Wabash Cannonball, because he's about 62 years old at the time, and I was afraid he might have a heart problem over that, So I tried to pick out a ride he could handle, and I found the bumper cars. I said, Norman, did you ever ride in a... No. I said, here's how they work. Push the pedal, turn the wheel, and get in, and have a good time. Get in there. We got him in there, and he sat down in that big old bumper car with all them kiddies and all them girlfriends that wanted to hit their boyfriends with their car and all the mothers that wanted to hit the fathers with a car. And he got everybody in the place caught over to one side. They turned that right on. He had the whole crowd pinned, and he had his car sideways and had them jammed in over there, and they were mad. And he was looking around going... And looking at me going, and he couldn't figure it out. We began to laugh. We were standing outside that place. Tears began to run in my eyes. I said, look, Carmel, look at him, Norman. He's got everyone caught over there. And the kids were going, oh. And finally, somebody got loose. And the ride was about half over, and they felt like they'd been cheated, and they were in a hurry. They came all the way around that rink, and they wanted to hit somebody before that ride was over. And there sat Norman, and they hit him full speed ahead. He went, oh. And then he really tried to get that thing going, and here comes someone else, and they were starting to get loose now in great numbers, and one by one, they'd come around and they'd hit Norman, and the Spirit of the Lord spoke to me at Opryland. And he said, that's what they've been doing to Norman all his life. People been hitting on him. They've been hitting on him. when they throw snowballs at him. Like he's not a human being, they hit on him. When they bring him old junky clothes they wouldn't wear anymore themselves, they hit on him. And then he said something I'll never forget. He said, "That's what my children do, my children, to one another. They get mad because they can't play the piano or the organ, or they can't teach their favorite Sunday school class, or they gossip about the preacher, or they gossip about some lady or some man." And then he reminded me of the 13th chapter, 1 Corinthians. "Though I speak with the tongues of men and angels, though I have all faith so I can remove mountains, understand all mysteries, if I have no charity, love, I need another cassette tape, another book. No, it says I am nothing." I had taken Norman an old suit of mine that I didn't wear anymore. God brought that to my attention, and I went over and looked in this closet, and I couldn't believe my eyes. Old shoes of every description you can imagine, old suits, sweaters that hung this way, all kinds of ties, bolos, sparkly ties, big wide ties, little ties, nothing that anyone would want to wear. I said, "God, give me an opportunity. Bless me some way, Lord." And a revival to sing at came in. And I know they gave me an offering at the end of the revival. And the Lord said, "Buy Norman a suit." I went downtown. I bought one of the nicest suits I could find. I made sure it cost at least more than any suit I owned in my wardrobe. And I went to get him and take him. And he picked it out. He liked it. It was kind of dark blue. He had good taste. It had a little stitching around here. It was polyester. It was nice. It was expensive. And I said, "Norman, you ever been clean?" He said, "It's been years," he said. He said, "I'm a hermit, you know. My dad got killed in the coal mines about 50 years ago. Went to work one day. I was just a little boy, and he didn't come home. Some men came to our house and said the roof fell in on him. I remember his funeral. I saw my uncle. Haven't ever seen him again." I said, "Norman, I'm going to run some water for you in your bathtub, and I really want you to get clean, because tonight I want to take you down to a church that's having a gospel singing." Went in his bathroom, I couldn't believe my eyes. Pulled the curtain back, oh, the floor was like dirt. The tub was so filthy, I had to take all the sacks out of it first. He saved paper sacks, I didn't know why. I took them all out, and then I cleaned the tub with SOS pads, and when I turned the hot water faucet on, it fell in the tub, and I got it back up and taped it back on and got it. It leaked a little, but it worked all right. And I got his hot water in there. And I went in and I said, "Now, Norman, see, you got a new white shirt and a tie to go with your suit. And you got new shoes and socks and underclothes. And let's really get clean. I mean, you know, really, really." And I said, "When you're through, holler at me, okay?" He went in there in the bathroom. And I went in the living room. Look at that unbelievable house he lived in.
Well, there are times when we need to end this broadcast, and I'm just not ready to end it. I want to go ahead and listen to the rest of the message that we're hearing. We're playing for you a tape that we've had in our files for a number of years now. We've created a book about this message. We've created a film with the same story from Mike Atkins. It's all called A Man Called Norman. And we'll return with the last few minutes on our next program.
You know, Mike, I think the second half of this tape is every bit as powerful as the first half. And I do hope that our listeners will be tuned in tomorrow, because there is great humor but great meaning in this message. Mm-hmm. I meet people almost every day who have been hit on, you know, who have gone through that from early childhood. Some of them have been abused in their families from the earliest days, and have gone through that emotional pain of being hit and the pain and the rejection of being pushed away. And all of those people need the same thing. They need what Mike was trying to give to Norman. They need somebody to put an arm around the shoulders and say, "I care about you." Mike is good at that. But I tell you something else, he's good at storytelling,
and I've enjoyed
hearing this again today.
And I definitely look forward to the rest of it when we come back. This program is provided by Focus on the Family. Our producer has been James Werning. Engineering and production are being handled by Brian Cooper and John Dorick. Our executive producer is Bobby Valentine. Our host is psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson. And I'm Mike Trout, looking forward to having you back when we'll hear again from Mike Atkins and turn our hearts toward home.